Accession number 20459, Reel 5.
Captain Spencer, Reel 5. Could you say what happened when you arrived at the 2nd Battalion and were sent off to find your platoon, 19 platoon?
Yes, well, having arrived at this forward post, the regimental headquarters where Mutton was, I reported to Mutton saying that I'm your liaison officer for spotting the best areas for where tanks can operate. He said, well, I don't want a liaison officer at all. You're now 19 platoon commander. And I said, but I'm in the Royal Armoured Corps. He said, well, you're now an infantry officer. On that note, they were very busy. I was more or less dismissed out to the yard outside. And at that moment, shelling of the buildings started, and one of the trucks in the yard caught fire, and two or three of us got on top of this back of the lorry to unload the ammunition that was in there. And I, after that particular incident, I started to look as to where this platoon that I'd been sent to was. And it took some considerable time asking a number of individuals as to where I might find, but I had the name of Sergeant Richards, and I eventually made contact with him and told him who I was, and was given a fairly kindly greeting, and was asked as to what particular weapon I would like to carry. Bearing in mind that a revolver, which I had, the army issue revolver, didn't appeal to me as being too effective a weapon for general fighting tactics, I suggested that I would have a Tommy gun, a Thompson Tommy gun. And Sergeant Richard said, yes, that's all right, sir. How much ammunition would you like it? I tried to wrap my brains as to what was the regulation amount and came up with a figure. And Sergeant Richard, you sure that's what you want, sir? And I said, yes, I think so. So he handed these magazines to me, which I loaded into my pouches. Bent down to pick up the gun, and the weight virtually overbalanced me. And Sergeant Richard said, you know, perhaps, sir, you know, a little less might be more practical, which we did. We were then had been told that we were to go to a particular area, which was on, I can't remember the map reference, but we were certainly next to the Americans, and we wended our way through the woods and trees to this particular hill. At that particular moment, it was fairly quiet, and I had spaced my men out into various parts on top of the hill and instructed them to dig slint trenches, and luckily the ground was not too rocky or hard, and we were able to do this. Then, while this was going on, a certain amount of, we could hear the mortars doing their testing shots.
And those be your mortars or enemy mortars?
Their mortars, yes. The enemy mortars were, we heard the pop and then the delay before the shells came and were in our location of where we dug our trenches. They were obviously, must have had some observation point, although we were on the back of the slope of this hill. But having made assessed the distance once now, it ceased for again for a moment, and I decided that I would try and go to the top of the hill to see if I could locate where the enemy might be, or whether there was any position up there in which they could have looked at us. I went did this by myself, and really, because it was a sort of bushy area and quite a lot of wood. I got almost to the brow of the hill, moving very quietly, when I heard at least two Germans talking just behind an area of bushes. So I very carefully lowered myself to the ground and thought, well, if I now run back, they might well hear me. So I've emptied my machine gun into the bushes, ran back down the hill shouting to my bloke, you know, don't shoot, for Christ's sake, it's me, and leapt into my tent. Can we stop there, please? I can't remember how many, we were certainly there for more than a couple of days, I think.
Did the enemy mortaring continue after you had that encounter?
Not at that particular stage. And I haven't got to say, but the following day, the mortaring attack came in very heavily. And luckily, the mortars were of equivalent to a two-inch but because of the deepness of the slit trenches, virtually no casualties were, except for I did hear a shout from one of the blokes that he'd been hit, and his mates brought him to me, and to my horror, he had the small mortar bomb lodged into the top of his shoulder.
The whole bomb?
It's a two-inch bomb, literally lodged in his shoulder with the fin sticking out. And his friends were sort of at a safe distance from him, and I particularly didn't want to do anything, but I'd learnt that to have removed it might have had more dire consequences to him from the bleeding point of view. So we took him back further down, and luckily we were able to put him somewhere for the time being, and stretcher bearers were being bought. I understand later that in actual fact they were able to safely remove the small mortar bomb, and that he recovered. Back in the trenches again, it was particularly heavy, and then heavy firing broke up from the top of the hill, and I was about trying to shout, you know, hold your fire for the time being, and because of a feeling of great fright, I found it was difficult to get the words out, and my batman, who was in the body, he said, count to 10, sir. Which I did very hurriedly, but grateful for the interruptions. I was then able to shout very clearly. And then I told them to fire it individually from a trench at a time with a continual burst of fire. But nobody actually came over the hill to attack us. And things went very quiet. And I understand that the enemy, within the next 2 days, had retreated from the hill, and we were taken out of the line very briefly before we were moved forward to the next position.
When you were in that position, how far was it from your forward slit trenches to the top of the hill?
I would say that the distance from the top of the hill, from the most forward trench, was probably about 100 to 150 yards at the most. We had been told to this sort of position, and I would have thought that no particular assault on the hill was planned at this particular time, because we'd only just recently got to this position, and I don't think any plans had been made.
How far forward could you see, given the vegetation and the reflections from
well,
your sight?
At places you could see to the brow of the hill. but and the initial brush wood wasn't that thick. In other words, there was no means of concealing more than one or two persons at a time. From then, I remember we had another hill, certainly, where the same pattern took place. We advanced down the side of the valley, and we were attacked. We were in a ditch at the bottom of the valley. My blokes were spread out again, and I asked them all to advance, and we had took some heavy fire. I think we only had one casualties there, but some Germans in the ditches at the, in their trenches at the top got up and fled away, and we then dug in on the side of that hill. We were, however, being fired at from some houses at the top of the hill, and I got on the radio calling in some for fire. I'm under the impression that this message didn't particularly have any effect, because almost instantly shells were coming in, but unfortunately close to our own position. In fact, that we didn't have any casualties from this fire.
Were these our shells coming
in? These our shells coming in from the reverse side. Mm. And so I asked Major Notley to ask for the barrage to be lifted, but the shelling continued for some time, and I asked for it to be lifted again, but no effect. So eventually I decided to go and locate Major Notley, but by some mischance the wrong map reference had been given, so they'd been comfortably lifting the barrage from further along, but not from where I was. So I did point out fairly heatedly that this is where we were, and very, very shortly the barrage then was lifted from where we were.
How far back from your location was company headquarters?
Well, company headquarters were probably 500 yards, I would say.
What sort of formation did you adopt when you did that advance?
Well, basically, a very extended line. What I would do is that the two outside arms would crossfire in front of us with the Thompson submachine guns and rifle fire. And then when we got to sort of, they would stop and we would go down, and then they would carry out the same concentrated fire, not necessarily at anything, but just blanket fire for the area we were doing, and they would join us.
So you were the centre section.
Were the centre section, and then two outside wings.
And two sections of the wings. So
which is rather, I'll go into the control side of it. And then we did this twice, and although there was quite a bit of resistance, our casualties, I think we only had three or four casualties of wounds only, and it used to now quite amuse me that as soon as anybody got wounded, shall we say, in a leg or in an arm or something, they'd run up to me immediately and say, you know, can I go back, sir? You know, I've been wounded. But being wounded was almost a bonus, so they could get out of the fighting. There were some farm buildings at the top, and although I've heard this as a joke since, I asked one of the blokes to search some trenches on the right to make sure there was nobody in it before we actually attacked the building itself. And I can't remember who it was now, but they said, all right, sir, but don't shoot the first man that comes out. And then we got to the building. At the corner of the building, there was still some resistance, and I went up to the wall. We had lobbed a grenade through one of the windows there, and one of the principles of looking round the portal is never look at eye level, is you either look at the bottom of the wall, and that which I did, and found there was a German there with a gun in his hand. So I came round challenging him, but he brought his gun, so I fired very quickly, and in fact killed him because I hit him straight in the chest.
But was he standing up then?
He was standing up, yes. He was not standing up, what's the name? I don't know where there was a doorway there he'd come through. But his view of where most of our people were was blocked. We took about six or seven prisoners who came out of the various buildings with their hands up.
What sort of chaps were they? Were they standard German Wehrmacht infantry or some other sort of troops?
This particular group, who had resisted us for several days and brought heavy fire on us, was commanded by a very tough German sergeant. And the number of people who put up this attack surprised me at the limited number there were. So they were obviously very seasoned soldiers with a great sense of discipline and what's name, which I found often was very, very true.
What sort of physical condition were they in when you took them?
Fine. They were, the uniform were, you know, slightly muddy, but I mean basically they were in very physically fit, obviously well fed, extremely surly and not at all happy to be out of the war at all.
Did any of them speak any English that you could tell?
No. And were not, no words were spoken. It was all done by gestures. I mean, we spoke English, but I mean, they're with the guns pointing at them. One of the problems when you had prisoners in the front line is what to do with them.
I was going to ask what you could do with them, given that you were
and that in this particular instance, as I say, we took five prisoners. I had, because of this difficulty, I had organized three people to look after the prisoners and search them, basically to make sure they haven't any concealed weapons or what's name on them, because we might have to move forward and go and deal with them. But on this particular occasion, these five Germans were taken back down the line. And this is a story that doesn't reflect too well on the Gurkha troops, who we are so very fond of. But they were handed over to this troop of Gurkhas and asked them to pass them back down the line. And when we came back several days later, back down the same way for a short rest, we discovered these five bodies with no heads. And it looked as if the heads had been used for football, which is really a terrifying thing. And even in that time, in spite of this, I was a bit shocked, to say the least, that, you know, that this could happen.
How did your soldiers react to that?
Well, they weren't, I mean, individually again, obviously some were rather shocked about it, but not all of us saw this anyway, because they were spread out so and so. But the comments were again, well, you know, better they than us. But prisoners were always a problem. The question of prisoners were always a bit difficult, as we found that they were basically stripped of everything by the time they got back to the camp, so that I made a statement that all monies over a certain 1,000 lira should be taken from for company funds, or whether they'd obviously had bags of loot that should be taken and distributed or handed to the local people.
Were there any local people about?
Very, very seldom to find them. I mean, every farmhouse, the farm people had more or less disappeared. We didn't even often come across groups of people. Occasionally there might be a barn in which a family might have been hiding. So where they disappeared to was very difficult to understand. On the whole, although it was in Italy, I found the local population were quite relieved that the war had passed them by and were, generally speaking, very friendly. I can't remember where particularly the next step was. There was somewhere further up the line, which is getting near to, I think, Montevarchi, where we'd come into there'd been fighting beforehand, and we'd crossed, I think, the Siena River, and going into the Montevarchi, houses were thought to be booby-trapped, so that one had to move very cautiously. I'd gone round to position my men at various parts of the town. We weren't in the front line as such, but in making my rounds at night, I came to a blanket over a doorway, and inside, blokes were playing cards. On an upturned crate with great piles of money. And apparently this was part of a vault of a bank had been broken into, and they were playing with thousands and thousands of liras. I said, well, I'm sorry, but this has got to be returned to so-and-so. But again, I distributed 2,000 liras amongst all the various people, and then had the money bundled up into two boxes and handed over to the MP. They probably spent them as well, but that was
took
that.
Their cut, probably.
Yeah.
When you mentioned booby traps, had you encountered booby traps before Montevarchi?
Yes, to a certain extent there were booby traps, nothing of very serious. A few wires, trip wires along the ground in certain things, a door attached to a trip wire, but they weren't that sophisticated. There was another occasion, though, when we'd advanced up to a railway line which was on an embankment with tunnels under it, and we, not the company, just my platoon, I think there were two platoons there, in this fairly long tunnel, which was blocked at either end, or not completely blocked, but was partitioned off at end by two huge construction of wood and earth and bricks and so forth, with a gapway so that you could wind round it.
So they barricaded the tunnel.
Barricaded it, it sort of in two sections like that. So you came so that
like
there was no. You had to, yes, like a chicane. And in the early morning when I was lying there, I looked up and I could see some wires glistening in the light. And I got up and followed along to the entrance, which was the enemy side, and climbed up on top of this, and I found there was a whole load of explosives up there with these wires attached to it. And so I quickly shouted for everybody to get out of the tunnel, and two or three of us got on top and were very delicately cutting these wires and throwing the explosives away, because we didn't want to particularly leave this tunnel. But there was an awful lot of explosives there, and if they had decided, I don't know whether it was to blow the railway bridge or just to blow the tunnel, but there was certainly enough there to have caused quite a large explosion.
Would it have brought down the whole roof of the tunnel, do you think? If they'd...
Well, there was enough there to have blown up the line above it, let alone what it would have done to the interior of the... But I think it was to blow up the line rather than...
Which was going overhead.
Yeah.
Well, how far away were the enemy at that stage? Were they just beyond these barricades? Or
well, at that particular stage, there was another line behind us, so we were probably about half a mile behind what was the line. The main problem with Italy is that when you travel through the country, the Germans had prepared line after line after line throughout the whole of Italy. You could see that they had positioned all these trenches to command the being fairly hilly or mountainous country. They had laid out the arc of fire with feet. They would where the mortar pits were, they'd given the range of each particular place. This was all written down, so when people retired to it, they didn't have to do locating fire. The distances were all measured out, which had made it very, very difficult for these continual frontal attacks against well-prepared positions. And often, when you had sort of consolidated yourselves and instructions were then to attack and they'd lay down very heavy artillery fire against the enemy positions, but at the time you got there, there was not so much fighting because apart from a few people, disciplined people, that sort of held your advance up as much as possible, the bulk of troops had already retreated to the next line of defence.
I'm going to ask you if they always stood until the assault reached them, or whether they retired ahead of the assault.
Yeah. Well, they often had retired before. It wasn't the overwhelming firepower or attack that made the retreat. It was they had already decided that we were then prepared for a full frontal, and said they'd retreat it.
It sounds like what they were doing was trying to delay you, but also conserve their own manpower at the same time.
With General Masson, who was not only an inspiring commander, but was obviously quite a skilled tactician in assessing the ability to move in certain directions or prepares and so and so. But it was the lack of information, and I had Atta and Odrin said that, you know, that perhaps we should organise better patrols. So he said, good idea, Spencer, you better start up, you know, a special patrol group. So I said, well, thank you very much. I was allocated two jeeps with trailers, and I carefully selected people, and I was able to draw on other platoons apart from my own.
What sort of people were you looking for? What qualities?
Well, I was looking for people mainly with not too much bulk. Tall is more obvious. Certainly physically fit people. People who were first-rate shots. People who I would thought could mould into a team that got on with each other so there was no what's name. And it generally worked very well. The training that I gave them was the question of moving. I had done a lot of shooting, rough shooting in my time, and sort of trying to move quietly through woods, you know, for against game or against rabbits and so on and so. There is a technique that if you move and step on a twig, you freeze.